Recognition as a dedicated and committed global and regional player in construction practice even receiving the body in the present image. The committee is also aware that among the highlights of the upcoming summit will be the agreement on the modalities of the respect. To me, this is a very important development, as this was created to provide an alternative to the traditional global economic era by way of bringing to the fore voices from the developing countries. Now, from what I understand, the then exchange to mobilize resources for infrastructure and sustainable development projects in Greece and other developing countries, thus providing an alternative institution from the World Bank and IMF for financing development in poor countries, especially in African continent. The creation of BRICS has proven the importance of collaboration between governments, academia, business and broader processes of society. And I would be honored about there to consider this process for a coordinated, coordinated processes of BRICS within South Africa. The other issue which I want to challenge my fellow honorable members is the possibility of a BRICS parliamentary forum, which will create the necessary space for robust debate on issues around domestic challenges, ensuring that there is a vital and dynamic link between what is happening with the BRICS and our policy we're dealing with our own challenges here at home, while at the same time monitoring processes not upon by the executive. Now this, I think, is a very important matter that we need to consider seriously as members of Parliament. Now, Deputy Minister, despite a need for greater understanding and knowledge by the majority of South Africans and the international community about the role of South African race, it's now in our view there are perceptions which I think this dialogue should try and address, some of which are probably due to a lack of understanding of the underlying reasons for being in BRICS in the first place. It's therefore important to know what various BRICS stand for, what South Africa's strategy is in engagement in the forum, what will hold this forum together, since the traditional denominator, such as said, when is not necessarily said to be immediately evident. Instead, BRICS is probably seen as a mechanized organization, you know, solely relying on mechanized or economic interests. South Africa has also often been said to be punching about it, we have halved its weight in BRICS. Now, this has been argued by critics, vehement critics like O'Neill, who based some of his arguments on the fact that other BRICS members are characterized by large populations, by high GDP per capita. You know, the homegrown companies that are world class comparatively, and global competitive and strong government based business relations. These are some of the characteristics pointed out by people like O'Neill, who argue therefore that South Africa is not on par with the rest of its respondents. My own view, however, is that O'Neill's arguments do not necessarily reflect the whole picture. Politically, amongst South Africa has been successful in its engagement in global governance forum, whether it's in the AU, whether it's in climate change or climate change, the G20, the Security Council, and so on. So we have only to put the rest, to put to rest the perception that South Africa is facing from some kind of an identity crisis within Greece. Now, furthermore, the involvement of the African Forum during the BRICS Summit in Durban is indeed a progressive and noble development. It will be interesting to know whether the African faced only the continuation of the summit, or whether a dynamic and real relationship is created between BRICS and Africa. The other perception is that in contrast to each, BRICS is not seen as grounded on, as I said earlier, on these various parliamentary arrangements. Now the question is whether South Africa will be able to endure what some perceive to be resourceful approach, resulting from participating in BRICS. The board that has come of BRICS is, amongst others, the Digital Partnership between Government and Business and Academia. However, the deal pointed out that luckily companies are facing stiff competition with state enterprises and large multinationals from other countries. How does Africa intend on dealing with these challenges? Deputy Minister, due to BRICS not being an alliance, discussions in the group are not as such necessarily binding. As a result, it is perceived that South Africa is not likely to influence a common approach to economic development in Africa in line with NEPAD. What are the prospects of dealing with this potential challenge? Moreover, each of the emerging economies has different diplomatic and economic development approaches when looking on the African continent. There have been skeptics have pointed out that at times some of these approaches might even be inconsistent with South Africa's emerging culture. Examples are given the conflicts that may arise in order to the reluctance to use locally on infrastructure projects, the dumping of cheap goods on our domestic markets, that would inevitably affect domestic industries, and the displacement of communities in favor of the extraction of energy resources. How will this potential threat be addressed to stay focused on attaining a good for our domestic priorities? Madam Moderator, in conclusion, we believe that BRICS countries need to focus strongly on the facilitation of trade. This is an important pillar of our international engagement because it's through those or the left in particular that we will be able to deal with our domestic challenges in the country. And of course, the ensuring that the business community share common interests with values from the ties facilitated to BRICS is indeed an important catalyst for economic development in South Africa. We have no doubt in our part, that South Africa took the right step by joining BRICS. We are convinced that the BRICS mechanism extended the emissions crisis is aimed to achieve, and I hope it aims to achieve, peace, security, development and cooperation. It also seeks to contribute significantly to the development of humanity and establish a fair and equitable world for peace. We remain convinced in the Minister that South Africa's involvement in placing better shots of Africa's domestic challenges and Africa's development. It is therefore my singular view and the honor to declare this dialogue open. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Shilisha Naidu. I'm the Senior Researcher of the South African Foreign Policy Initiative. I just want to say that we are greatly honored to be working with the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee today in hosting this dialogue, as well as to provide an enabling environment for discussions around BRICS. We see this as an important aspect of our engagement in Cape Town in hosting and enabling a platform for discussion. And I would not want to go further, but I'd like to now ask the Deputy Minister to provide us with his presentation on the BRICS.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson, honourable members of Parliament, and ladies and gentlemen. First of all, I'd like to convey apologies of Minister Masabane for not being present here today because she's meeting the Russian foreign minister who's on a visit to South Africa, and of course tomorrow she will be attending the cabinet meeting. Now, I've got a PowerPoint presentation and I'd like to take you through this PowerPoint presentation and on the question of BRICS. Now, first of all, what is the rationale of South Africa's membership BRICS? Minister Honor Shabana did say that in the 21st century, policy making is a multi-dimensional approach. You have the bilateral approach, you have the plurilateral approach, and the multilateral approach to policy making after in this new era. Now, looking at the global dimension, the world, of course, since the end of the Cold War, there is a new group of countries that have emerged. Economic development has shifted from what was traditionally the West to some may call it the East, but countries like Brazil, Russia, India, China, that is the BRICS countries, are on the ascendancy. And these countries are expected to play an important role in remapping the political and economic power relationship in the world. And therefore, South Africa's membership of BRICS, I think, needs to be looked at in that context. Now, of course, South Africa has had close relations with the BRICS country. I think the word fellow travelers is misplaced. I think that needs to be changed a bit. We have had these countries have supported our struggle, not only in South Africa, but the struggle against colonialism on the continent of Africa and other parts of the world. And in the global world today, there is an interdependent global network that we see. BRICS provides a new global template and caucus overriding previous East-West, North-South construction and division. Now it's interesting if you look at the profile of BRICS. Now, if you look at the profile, it makes very, very interesting reading. 25% of the global GDP, and 30% of global land mass, and 43% of global population, and 4.4 trillion foreign reserve base is found in the BRICS countries. It continues to say that BRICS is likely to account for 50% of global consumption by the middle class, whose earning between $16 and $50 per day by 2050. And of course, depending on whether you measure British economies in dollar terms or in PPP terms, over the next 10 years, British share of world GDP will increase. In market terms, it is about 20% of the GDP, which will increase to about 28 over the next 10 years, and even to about one-third by 2030. A third of world GDP at the moment. By 2020, it will account for 37 to 38%, and would increase as much as 45% by 2030. Now, what does this tell you? This certainly indicates the tremendous economic potential and power that the BRICS country has, and the potential for growth in the BRICS country. You compare that now with the potential or the growth in the old developing country. That is why BRICS, of course, becomes such an important grouping of nations. The contribution of BRICS to global economic growth has reached over 50% over the past decade, making it the principal driver of global economic development. Underline that the principal driver of global economic development. And of course, the resilience of this emerging market also has existed in lower income countries whether the financial crisis. Now, you may recall that South Africa had originally put forward the idea of G8 of the South. You remember during the time of President Meiji, he always advocated that you had a G8 of the North, or G8 7 plus 1, but he felt that there should be a G8 of the South. In terms of regional dynamics, now you know the economy, the Standard Bank has a regular report on the dramatic rise in BRICS, Africa, trade and investments. Now there's been a flow of trade and investment between the BRICS countries and the continent of Africa. And that has sort of had a tremendous effect on the development of the African continent. And that gives you some idea of the increasing foreign investment towards the continent of Africa. Now, why is Africa important? It has 60% of the world's unused edible agricultural land. It has a young population and a growing middle class with considerable purchasing power. Africa today, it is said that offers the highest return on investment and is second fastest growing region after Asia. Now this statistic is quite revealing. In 2010, six of the world's fastest growing economies were in Africa, and seven African countries are expected to be the top 10 over the next 5 years. Africa's output is expected to expand by 50% over the next 4 years, from 1.6 trillion in 2010 to approximately 2.6 in 2015. Economic growth is projected to expand by an annual average real rate of 5.5% each year through the 5-year period. Now you know there's a big push on the continent for infrastructure development. It is estimated that total infrastructure spending need for sub-Saharan African range between $75 to $100 billion a year, more than 12% of the region's GDP. BRICS Africa trade is projected to increase threefold from $150 billion in 2010 to $530 billion in 2015. BRICS share of Africa's total trade will increase 1/5 to 1/10. And BRICS FDI is projected to increase 60 billion in 2009 to more than 150 billion in 2015. Now what does this statistic say? That as I said, that Africa is the second largest growing region economically. And Africa has tremendous potential for economic growth. And the link between Africa and the BRICS country is very crucial for the economic growth and the development of the continent. You see from this statistic that the BRICS country has contributed tremendously and will continue to contribute to Africa's growth and development. Now the next slide will tell you that Sub-Saharan countries are spending nearly 8% of the GDP on roads, power, aviation, telecommunication and other sectors. Still, even though 45 billion is going to African infrastructure, projected needs are double that. Projected needs are double that of the next 10 years. So you find in the next slide the infrastructure deficit amounts to 93 billion energy annually until 2020. So these finances will have to come into Africa for a successful infrastructure development. Dealing with the domestic dimension. Now, Minister Mashabana emphasized that there are three aspects here. Our membership is bridge, we're expecting there's a prospect of attracting investment into our economy, and it contributes to our economic, is our growth of our export, you see the figures just now, and of course creating conditions for employment. Now this is in line with one of our commitments to cast all our foreign policy in the mold of our domestic development priorities. Bilateral South Africa bridge trade grew substantially in 2011, followed by a significant increase in trade and export. Now these are interesting figures. Bilateral trade between South Africa and China last year grew by 32%. Trade with India 25%, and trade with Brazil by 20%. Bilateral trade with China last year totaled 188 billion rands, with India 55 billion rands, with Brazil 18 billion rands, and with Russia 3.8 billion rands. That is the growth of our bilateral trade. South Africa's export to China grew the most by 46%, while export to India grew by 20%, to Brazil by 14%, and of course Russia by 7%. Now this gives you some indication of our trade. Our trade figures. I think you could go over that to make this clear. What are import and export trade with the BRICS countries? Now, again with the domestic dimension. Now, our country's financial system are very sophisticated and robust, and our banking regulation ranks with the best in the world. Now, South Africa has had a relationship with India and Brazil as part of ECA, and South Africa has a comprehensive strategic partnership signed by President Zuma with China, and a treaty of friendship and partnership with Russia. So we already have important relationship with the BRICS countries before we became members of this. Now the cabinet had approved our BRICS strategy. The matter was taken to all the departments. DILCO, our department, was to deal with the political issues, and the Ministry of Finance would deal with the financial and other economic issues. And we have had a comprehensive strategy as to how South Africa was going to locate itself and take advantage of the prospect that is offered by the BRICS country. Now, DILCO's mission is to promote South Africa's national interests. Our foreign policy, of course, is based, like any other country's foreign policy, is based on its own national interests. Of course, our national interest is to promote human rights, democracy, good governance, and championing the African agenda. Now, we, of course, as a department, will continue to consolidate its strategic advances in area an area of strength in foreign policy and finding innovative ways of enhancing our performance. Now, the importance of our country is that we belong to a number of multilateral organizations like the African Union, G77 and China. We are part of the Non-Aligned Movement, which is appreciated by the BRICS countries, but South Africa does have a role in the international multilateral organization. Now, and of course we are the only African country that is part of the G20. And in the G20, of course, we project African interests and advocate the reform of global and economic financial institutions. Now, in the setting itself in the world, as part of our transforming agenda, the British leaders, of course, did want to support the IMF. We did contribute to the International Monetary Fund in what was called the Further Firewall Fund of $27 billion, and South Africa pledged $2 billion, which is in line with our vision to transform the institution of global governance. Next. Now, there are currently two financial initiatives aimed at promoting inter-BRICS cooperation. The first one is the Framework Agreement on Financial Cooperation, signed between 5 developing banks from the BRICS countries, that is the Framework Agreement on Financial Cooperation. And secondly, the contingent reserve pooling arrangements and bilateral swaps. Now, at the 4th BRICS summit that took place in New Delhi, agreements were signed. Financial agreements were signed, which had two components. One, the master agreement on local currency credit facilities. And multilateral letter of credit on commercial facilities. Now, the aim of this agreement is to strengthen and develop trade and economic relations among the financial institutions of the BRIC members, extending credit to each other in local currencies, on the other line, in local currencies. The mechanism would enable 5 countries to reduce dependence on the US dollar, cut trading costs, increase trade and investment flows, and push forward internationalization of their currency. So there's a move, of course, for the BRICS country to begin to swap and trade in the own currency, and if possible, attempt to move away from the United States dollar. Of course, there was a view that there should be an international development bank for fostering South-South investment. And the meeting in New Delhi March 2011, the BRIC leader said, and I quote, "We have considered the possibilities of setting up a new development bank for mobilizing resources for infrastructure and sustainable development projects in BRICS and other emerging economies and developing countries to supplement the existing efforts of multilateral and regional financial institutions for global growth and development. We direct our foreign ministers to examine the feasibility and viability, of such an initiative. Set up a joint working group to further study and report back to us by the next summit." Now, a joint working group was set up to look at this whole feasibility, make a feasibility and a viability study. Now, suddenly our host has joined working group in January 2013 and finalized the report which will be presented to the Great Summit next month. And the Great Summit will then take a decision on whether to set up a what is called a bank, ready for it, a great bank or a South Bank. The next slide will tell you about our team for the BRICS Summit. BRICS and Africa Partnership for Development, Integration and Industrialization. Now, this team we have chosen particularly because we felt that since the BRICS Summit has been held in Africa, we need to have an Africa dimension to it, which will result in the strengthening of AU and the strengthening of even of NEPA. And we have got, of course, an outreach program with the African states. Our president has invited a number of African leaders to have an outreach program with the BRICS countries. The leaders, I think about 16 of them will be coming to South Africa. The leaders of all the regional economic communities and of course also the African Union. I think we should pass through this. Of course, we served in the United Nations Security Council, and one of the achievements of South Africa was that we got the United Nations Security Council to agree that there should be close cooperation between the United Nations Security Council and the AU Security Council, AU Peace and Security Council, and this was, of course, adopted by the government, by the African leaders. Last month. I think we should pass through that. South Africa's comparative advantage. Now, what is South Africa's comparative advantage for being in a BRICS, for being part of it? Of course, South Africa has a considerable non-energy and mineral wealth. It is estimated at 2.5 trillion or 18 trillion rands. And we are the world's biggest producers of certain minerals, platinum, chrome, vanadium, and manganese, and the third largest gold producers, as well as offering a sophisticated mining-related professional service. South Africa also brings a stable political environment with a rule of law. And South Africa also plays a leading role in conflict resolution. We have a very financial market and very sophisticated financial institutions. We have geostrategic advantage being between East and Africa, Europe, and the Middle East. We have South Africa excellence in science and technology, which is recognized by awarding us the Square Kilometers Array. And as it says, South Africa global governance, we are part of G77 in China and the AU. Now, of course, we will pass to that. Now, Minister Mashabane hosted the annual meeting of British Ministers of International Relations, that is at the UNGA, at the United Nations General Assembly, on 26 September. And this was a big one. We are going to launch of a bridge-led new development bank. We, of course, we are not saying that we're going to launch it, but it will depend on the feasibility studies and what the bridge leaders decide. We're going to have a bridge leader African dialogue forum, and I did mention that a number of African leaders have been invited and they will be coming to South Africa to take part in the bridge Africa leadership. Now, this is the first time we're having an outreach program. You may recall that before the Delhi meeting, certain African leaders, it was Malays from Ethiopia, Jamfing, and the chair of the African Union at that time, wrote a letter to President Zuma saying that when he goes to New Delhi, he must begin to put the African agenda on the table. We need to discuss the question of Africa and the question of assistance to the continent of Africa. So this is the first time we're having what is called an outreach program where we are focusing on the continent of Africa. We're also launching a bridge business council. We're going to get business leaders from all the bridge countries to meet and to discuss the question of potential that the business community has. And we're also going to launch business think tanks and an academic forum. I think we'll pass to that. President Zuma will host the post-summit Bridge Leaders Africa Dialogue Forum reaching the 27th March, and the theme will be Unlocking Africa's Potential, Bridge and Africa Cooperation on Infrastructure. And the last paragraph says Bridge Academic Forum will take place between the 10th and the 13th of March 2013. Meeting of Bridge Trade Ministers on the 26th of March. Bridge Finance Ministers will meet on the 26th of March as well. Bridge Business Forum will meet on the 26th of March as well. And the Forum on Bridge Interbank Cooperation Mechanism, 26th of March. And there will be other events which will be announced at a later date. And I thought I'd just take you briefly through our role in BRICS. I think that South Africa, as it was said, that when in BRICS, we are trying not only to look at our own national interests in terms of trade, in terms of investment, but also we want to put forward the interests of the continent of Africa, particularly on infrastructure development. We've seen that we need between 90 to 100 billion dollars in infrastructure in the next, I think, 20 years. And we're hoping that the British countries, the large foreign reserve they had, that they would pour in some of this money into Africa infrastructure development. And also, of course, the question of trade and investment on the continent is quite important. Now, I know you said you are supposed to give a keynote address, which I didn't do. I thought I would just take you through the slides to show you some of the activities that we are going to have as far as the great summit is concerned, and some of the reasons why we think South Africa's role in BRICS is an important one, and we should take full advantage of our membership of BRICS, not only for our own country in South Africa, but in Africa and the world itself. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. There's going to be a discussion later on, but I think now we're going to ask Honourable wish to make some remarks on some of the issues that were covered in the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I have focused on a slightly different direction, but may address this issue as well. Minister, Member of the Diplomatic Corps, I would Chair of the Portfolio Committee, Yang Long Gam, and colleagues, honourable colleagues. I think in the first instance, Minister, the presentation which you have shared with us this morning has really highlighted the broader significance of BRICS, not simply from a tight trading role as such, but actually as a catalyst in the development of Africa itself as a region. And related to that, the whole broader development and strengthening of what started off as South-South cooperation, which we're now putting further planks in place in order to see the South-South starting off the cooperation leads in fact to a very, very solid platform of relationships in which the countries become these newly emerging industrialized countries, and only Russia seems to have been there before as an industrial area, is able to compete equally with what was described as the North-North situation, and earlier referred to by yourself as an earlier North-North sort of G8. And I think that it also, up to now, notwithstanding our engagement with our traditional partners, it has always remained a sort of equal footing in that relationship. And yet, BRICS offers all of us in Africa, in South Africa, and the other countries, the opportunity to disengage this dependence that exists, which is largely anchored on early historical ties, but more recently in modern times, on the financial power of North in this particular regard, and the lacking of financial instruments. And I do think that, Honourable Chairperson, we ought to thank you as members of Parliament, particularly the National Assembly, for offering us all this opportunity to engage in a very critical area. And certainly with respect to some of the ideas coming forth here and the proposals, it would become, I think, very useful for us to take them on board, the idea of what you yourself refer to as a parliamentary forum or structure of some sort that would be dedicated to this BRICS. And in the second instance, what the Minister was referring to the various memorandum and agreements that would reinforce what up to now is largely a cooperative alliance in a particular regard. And I assume from the trade and industry side, this really for the BRICS offers a great opportunity and perhaps the first real opportunity on which we can move from strength into the markets themselves. So I do, you know, I'm sure other chairs and maybe present and members through you, facilitator or mediator, if you want me to new names, moderator. I'm certainly not mediator, I think we've got a great speaking role. But one would really like to thank you from our, certainly from the committee side of trade and the industry, for the opportunity to participate. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I would like to now call our discussion to Dr. Chukwumanu Zondi, the Executive Director of the Institute for Global Dialogue, to provide some remarks in respect of the issues we raised and also some reflections on the discussion that we've had forward. Dr. Zondi?
Thank you very much, Sanusha, and good morning to everybody. I'd like to say all protocols of that. I'm not certain if I'm able to mention it by proper titles, so I'll dispense with you on Arabs and their clarity. I might have made a mistake. My task is very, very simple. My task is really to flesh out a few things that we might want to debate in this exercise. And my thoughts are just my thoughts, and my thoughts are meant to have us think about what the Deputy Minister has indicated. I must thank the Deputy Minister for allowing space for us to interact with these ideas, and I've followed the provincial brochure, where quite a growing body of information is coming out from our government. Because my concern all along has been that we've not been communicating enough about these things, and we've been allowing debates that are not based on facts, on information, on contested information to continue to shape public thinking about what is happening with the Greeks, and so on. And therefore we believe that there is a process of public engagement which I hope will go beyond the summit itself. The first point I wanted to make is a controversial point in our field, because it's not supposed to be a main point to make. It was once for South Africa to join the BRICS. It's far already said about South Africa not being the lead of the BRICS, not being the size of the BRICS, not being in the same stature as the BRICS and the global power, not being as global as others are. And I say this because the BRICS have become more significant and more complex as a body, not necessarily just individually as a body, than what matching or even the government starts at this age 2 decades ago. It is much closer to what was at this age much earlier in 1953 at the Rangoon Conference in Burma, which preceded the Bandung Conference of 1955 and the Cairo and the South Conference of Cairo 1955. And the whole idea was articulated with what was at this age by the South Commission, which set between 1987 and 1990 was chaired by Julius Nyerere, the former president of Tanzania, which envisaged the three things mainly. I'll summarize it. The first one is a disobedient project. A project that looked for a different order in the big pessimism of the Cold War era about two contesting views about the world order. So an impetus for a new and inclusive, a critical global order. The second one is a building of a third world, where third world means world in sequence, not as we colloquially use the term, where the first world is an agricultural world, which was pre-industrial, and the second world is an industrial world, which was built on the back of imperialism and capitalism, which had carried us through to this point and been very prosperous in many ways, but it excluded a large number of people, a number of countries. Therefore, the idea that the new impetus for the new world, the new vision, can only come from those who suffered, can only come from those who have been excluded, can only come from those who have something very basic to contribute into this world. The third proposition from all of this initiative was that global changes for greater prosperity of the world will happen when the developing countries become agents rather than objects of global change. When they take initiative, when they're willing to take responsibility for global commons, when they are willing to exercise their responsibilities, however meager their resources are, but they're willing to envision a new world. The fourth proposition was the South-South Cooperation. At that point, South-South Cooperation would have to move beyond mere political solidarity to, I call now the South-South Commission, which said, by joint endeavors to use to the maximum their different resources of expertise, of capital, and markets, all will be able to address their separate and different needs more effectively, thereby widening development options for the peoples of the world. That is what Greg is promising to move towards, provided certain things are done, which I will come back to later on. The second point to make is that indeed BRICS is part of the global. And as what we know, many challenges we face right now stem from the global. It could be globalization of a particular economic system that excludes and includes some. It could be globalization of culture, digital civilization that is inadequate to make the world a prosperous world for everybody else. And the BRICS are global in the sense that they are all, at least the all-called emerging global powers, which means they are much more significant in economic terms than they have ever been in the past, and the minister, deputy minister, indicated the figures that show that. But if you were to think of this link to Africa, and if it was fully harnessed and realized, then the BRICS would be much more significant in GDP terms, in population terms, in med area terms, in capital. All the pictures I read to earlier, I would add the last one, the legitimacy terms. Well, Africa is a huge region, and it has a huge potential. And if that link was created, the BRICS become a lot more significant than has been our plan here. And this bigger BRICS, presents two opportunities for us, an opportunity to tap into huge economic resources that we need to fund our own national economies and our regional economies and all of that. The second one is an opportunity to contribute in very significant ways as poorer countries, as developing countries, in global reform. We have a greater chance to succeed than any initiative in the past, from the new international economic order of the 1970s to the UN reform initiatives of the past 6 years. So for the first time, the South has a chance of becoming underwriters of global economic recovery and shaping the new global order. So there's an opportunity there. But again, mark my word, opportunity. It's an opportunity. The third thing is that the BRICS, both those of us who want to praise it and those who want to criticize it must accept that they are evolving. This is an evolving initiative, and therefore it's a precious moment to shape what it becomes. It is not what it is, but it will be what all individual members of the BRICS make it to become. So therefore I'm very pleased to see an evolving and a growing developmental agenda within it, from questions of financial cooperation to reserve pooling to credit facilities and development bank, for this offer some opportunity for countries, especially countries of Africa, to grow, to cope with the vagaries of global finance and how it impacts on their federalization or their strength, their being centered in the global environment. And it also creates opportunities for alternative pools of capital to finance effective growth and sustainable growth in the global South generally and in other parts of the world. And what I want to comment on is on this idea of BRICS and Africa. And we should all welcome, I think, the theme of this meeting, not merely because it brings BRICS and Africa, but it defines what will be the basis of that link. Certainly, development is an important question. Certainly, integration is very fundamental to anything Africa would achieve. Because those of us who study Africa will tell you that the fundamental problem facing Africa is that you have countries that should not exist anywhere. Now I can say this because I'm not a politician. You have countries that shouldn't exist because they are not viable, they are not contiguous, they never existed, but they were created in the Berlin Conference of the Farm. And for that reason, but 50, 55 years after independence, they still cannot survive. They completely depend on donors for even the most basic stuff. About 65% of African countries depend almost entirely on donors for budget support, which is a basic, very basic thing that they do. And the industrialization is that which Africa needs to have for the biggest challenge for Africa in the economic sense, respect to the fact that we export primary commodities and import manufactured goods. So those three anchors of the Greek Africa relationship are very, very, very important, though they are not immune. The challenge then for us is also how well we work with African countries as to convince African countries. And so I have to say, we have to convince us as African countries that it is important to make those three things a big focus for us. We have to convince African countries that donor aid is not the major focus for our development. For many countries, they become accustomed really to dependence. And the ones they depend upon have also become accustomed to making them dependent. Because donor aid is a huge industry. It employs huge numbers of people in the West. And if this country stops depending, the unemployment may rise in the West. So there is a structure of things that we need to be dealt with. So therefore I ask the question whether Africa is ready right now to depart from the norm. It's an unfair question because it's hard to decide to deal with now, to depart from the norm. And it might take us 10 years for countries to learn to self-rely and find their own ways of developing. But second question is whether there is sufficient policy space for many of these countries to take drastic decisions that they need to take to place development, industrialization and preparation at the center of their policies, because frankly many of these countries don't decide what they do. Because if we don't have resources, we don't quite decide. Because if we should go horses beggars would ride, in this particular case it's a very true thing. Who has the resources decides what they do. And I think quite frequently of the case of Malawi in 2002, when they were forced by the World Bank to sell off their excess grain at their bounty harvest because the IMF thought it was economically incorrect, which meant it was ideologically incorrect to keep reserves. And that very next year, there was a drought, and for the next 3 years, Malawi had to depend on food imports because Malawi does not decide. The donors on which it depends decide. Can't decide to blame the donors? You have to also blame Malawi for allowing yourself to depend. So therefore, whether dominant external actors will also make it easy for Africa to make this change, means we have to confront some very difficult political questions. It's not going to be easy. It is about changing the very structure on which our global order today is based, and that should be seen as work that must be done over a period of time persistently, and we should not hope that by mere proclamation everybody will see it as wise and therefore it must be done. In my view, basically the very idea of meeting up BRICS and Africa and making these big questions is a form of disobedience to the current order. And a form of challenge to the current order, and therefore should be ready for this. Or there are two major factors. Africa is a major focus of both the emerging powers and the old global powers, and the old global powers are not going to allow the BRICS to take over. It's just plain logic and common sense. And the new emerging powers are moving to the continent because they see opportunities. Not in all cases they think about South Africa and doing so, because they too have their own economic interests. So we have to think about that as well. And therefore in many ways Africa has become a new site for a new Cold War. And that Cold War is about economics. And therefore we should be very careful to make sure that we are ready to navigate and deal with the challenges that will arise out of that. And they will begin at home. They will begin right here in South Africa, because there will be some among us who are accustomed to the old order, who would not allow this new order that allows Africa or wants to take control of its agenda going forward, maybe through these BRICS and through other initiatives like the new Asia-Africa partnership that the AU decided on last year. And therefore I think that it was wise for South Africa to make sure that the African Union is involved in formalizing its intentions to link up with the African continent, because the institution does provide some form of security and does provide some form of impetus for accelerating all the changes that need to happen. And therefore the African Union will become an important anchor for this work, because people are going to raise questions about how do you make sure that these national positions actually get carried out unless you put place them in some kind of a political institution. And I would really hope that we have the stamina to take you to follow through and move with this going forward. For it is going to be very difficult. For the benefits of Africa are more promised right now than reality, provided the continent makes certain decisions, very difficult decisions about changing the very structure of economies that we inherited, and the economic logic that was inherited with it. It's an economic logic which says we should supply primary commodities to the developed world and other parts of the world and import. It's a logic which says aid is the only source of us, of state public goods work. It's a logic which says Africans are unable to create indigenous wealth and capital. It's a logic which says the neoliberal economic ideology is the only option instead of being one of the main options. That Africa is a land of empty, there's no culture, there's no arts, there's no science, and therefore no paradigm for its own renaissance out there.
Thank you very much, Dr. Fleming. We were supposed to have a 15-minute break, and then we'll come back to reconvene at 11:15 for an open discussion and to be able to reflect. Thank you. Peace.